So you were born, and we dated them.
My name is Toni Muncy. I was born in Kodiak, Alaska, and I was born in 1954. August 14th, 1954.
And your parents?
My parents were Park and Pat Muncy, who came here in 1949.
Just after World War II, then?
Yeah. My dad was in the war, or was in the Army. Came here in the Army.
Oh, he came here in the Army?
Uh-huh. And then left again and went to Anchorage. He came to Anchorage, or he came to Alaska in the Army, spent, I think, 2 years at the Coast Guard base, what's now the Coast Guard base. Went back, got out of the Army, went to Anchorage, and started raising dogs. He got a dog sled thing. And he got hurt, and he also worked in the coal mine, or the gold mines up there, or coal, whatever it was. He got hurt in the mine and went to a hospital in Anchorage where my mom was working. She was a nurse there.
Oh, wow. That's
her sister.
Well, what did he do in the Army?
He was a rifleman. He just came here as a, I guess, infantryman. What do they call him in the Army? Yeah.
Did he have anything to do with the invasion of Kistler?
No. He never saw anything happen here.
Never saw anything.
He was totally, he didn't do anything. He just, he fell in love with Korea. He knew he had to come back from that. That's, I remember him, talking about it as a kid, or when we were kids, saying that he knew instantly, when he was here. This is where he wanted to be.
Oh, that's me. That happens with a lot of people. But he didn't say, he just didn't do anything, huh? He just
sat
around.
By that time, there was nothing going on here.
Oh.
I mean, it was pretty much over. I mean, nothing ever happened in Portland.
Yeah.
The military part.
Mm-hmm. Did he ever tell you any stories about it?
Not the military part, no. He talked a lot about being in Palmer with my dogs and raising dogs, and how dangerous it was up there to work in the coal mines, and you're going to have to figure out what's coal mines or gold mines.
Probably just the Valley coal mine.
I think it's coal.
Yeah.
I think it is, yeah. But that, they didn't have the equipment they have now.
You didn't talk about coal when he was in the military.
No, he was in the military. Huh?
That's too bad.
No. No, because he might have had some idea what some of this stuff is around here.
Yeah, and just the changes that Kodiak's gone through.
And then when did you guys move out? When did you get to bear camp? We got to be at bear camp in 1952. And he went back and forth a lot then, because I was born for him. I was their first kid. I was born for 54.
Mm-hmm.
He also worked at the same time he worked at Petroy Bay, which is now Hatchery, and which was then was two games close, they were starting Hatchery. And he worked there. In fact, that's when I was just about born there. They had to fly in on a real quick, and I was born there.
I bet your mother had stories about
where
that.
The mental health center is now. That was the Kodiak Island Hospital.
The Griffin Building.
Griffin Building, yeah. And we moved out to camp, and it was pretty rugged. I mean, there was not much out there. And when we moved out there, it was an old house that nobody had really taken care of over the years, and they built it up, over the years to a real nice home.
No
running water, no toilets. I mean, I remember going out. Well, at night you didn't. You just had a bucket. But I remember going out, lacking way away from the house to go to the bathroom. And, that's just how we survived. I didn't think about it. But, and then slowly we got, Dad got a little bit better at what he did. And slowly he got a pilot's license and we got a plane. And then we were big time. We fly back and forth to Canada and stuff. But we still didn't, we went to school out there and everything. We went to town for school. My mom taught us all. We had a one room that was just for school, just desks and stuff, and that kind of stuff. And she taught all of us. At one time, I think she was teaching four grades at once. So she was good. Now I realize how good she was at the time. I didn't think anything of it.
Uh-huh.
But, and Dad would fly in like once every couple of weeks and pick up the mail and stuff like that. I don't know, it was a fun way to grow up. We didn't think we were different. You don't know until you come to town. We'd come to town and we'd have a car. And I can remember Dad walking with us. There were six of us. There was five at that time. And Dad walked really, really fast. And we lived in a little home and Dad used to blocked us downtown, and we all walked right behind him. And I know people thought we were lost.
Well, you're doing just wonderful right now.
I think you're doing great. Well, who did your dad?
Do you know the history of the camp? Who owned it before your dad? And
well, Bill Bowen owned it before dad, but before that, it was a gold mine. It was right up the bay from us, about a quarter of a mile, a working gold mine. And the caretakers used to live there. It was also where they made all the alcohol. You know, they made booze there for those guys. And
a still. And what?
As a kid,
did you yak? You yak?
Yeah. As a kid, I remember Dad used to pay us a penny for every piece of glass we found on the beach, because we had our float plane, and the glass would puncture the floats.
Ah.
And so when they cleared out of that place, they threw every bottle on the beach.
Oh my God.
We're talking hundreds and hundreds of bottles.
You must have thought you were filthy rich.
Well, we make pretty good money. My brothers used to break them up, because it was a penny for every piece. But that's how we made money as kids. I mean, the beaches were covered, but the walls in the house were like the newspapers. That's how they insulated it. They take 5 gallon cans and flat them, and they put newspaper on top of them, and then that was their insulation in this house. And the newspapers and stuff from that time were just amazing. I mean, there was a lot of people in that day. You know, it was the ships that came in and out of there were 200 feet long, and they were huge. And they bring the,
what were they,
ore out, or whatever. They, I mean, they had process gold there. They had the rock there. It would be brought out.
Oh, they took the rock?
Took the rock and everything. And when they, I think they were one of their last trip, they hit a rock right outside of Amoth Island, which is right in Uyak Bay. And the boats were still down there. They've never, it's too deep to dive on.
And it's still got the gold ore?
Well, they say it doesn't, you know,
no.
So nobody, I think if it did, they would have dove by now, but.
So it was empty of
it. It was empty. It was coming in for a trip. But everything's still there. You know, I mean, they blew up some of the stuff when they left because they didn't want anybody else using it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, all the tunnels are there.
Oh, so it was a hard rock one?
Yes. They had trains running through there. I mean,
no, where is this? At the head of the bay?
No, it's about a quarter mile from camp and you left to it.
You're kidding.
No. And now, so this guy, the bootlegger guy that had camp, I mean, he had a name. You know, he probably was a very wealthy man.
In that
day. And all the people, you know, it was kind of a simple point for the bay.
Uh-huh.
I don't know much about, you know, the Larson Bay people, if they came over a lot, but Zachar Bay had a, and so did the head of the island, had a two fox farms going. You know, so there was a lot of activity.
What, do you know what when this was?
The house was built in 1912.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say it would be in the 1912,
right around the, but just before or after the Katmai eruption.
What was it? Was that 1916?
No, it was 1912. We became a territory in Katmai eruption year.
I think the house was built after the eruption. Because we don't have any sign of, because the house is basically the same as it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think there'd be some kind of devastation or something. I mean, there would be something about the foundation or, even though there is a lot of ash around there now. But anyway, then Dad bought it from Bill Poland, and there's a graveyard there where the people who, the bootleggers, had their a nice fenced in, beautiful graveyard for his wife. He died, and so she buried him there. And I don't know, I think she's buried in Larson Bay.
Uh huh.
But Dad just always wanted to be outdoors and stuff. He was from New Hampshire and always spent a lot of time outside. And all this. And
what did your mom think of that?
Well, she was from West Virginia, but she was in Anchorage anyway, so she obviously, you know, and she was a nurse, and her and her sister were both nurses, and they came up just to, you know, they were kind of tough ladies for that time, because they came up together to Alaska, didn't know anybody, you know, just decided, I think they did have a far-off uncle or something, that they knew his name.
What was your mom's maiden name?
Just Atkins.
Atkins.
Uh-huh. And she was from West Virginia.
Pat Atkins.
Yep. And, but anyway, they just, the business was slow for a long, long time, you know, just slowly.
And he was a their guy, right?
Yeah. He also was a pilot. He flew for different airlines at different times. You know, whenever the business was slow, he'd fly for, at that time, Kodiak Western. And he also had a charter business, where he chartered out for people. But and then finally, he went to the mainland. He started branching out a little bit and went across the strait to Sharp Lake. And that was about 1965. And we used to fly, the whole family would fly over there and set up house for a month.
And we all fly back. And you're out in the middle of nowhere. You know, I mean, Jesus, you travel over there.
Well, did you ever have any experiences with bears coming up to the cabin? And
well, I can remember a couple times, but this was pretty recent. I mean, in the last 15 years or so, I remember I was cooking over there, and we were asleep. We were sleeping, and we had a light on outside. Somebody had a Coleman on, and the bear came between our tent and a tree. It was just—it took the whole tent, and two, but you could see every hair on the bear from the light, just leaning up against the up against the thing. But they always were in camp. But they were always, well, you know, they didn't want to hurt us, and they just wanted to meet. You know, because we hunted for caribou and bear and moose over there. And they just wanted that moose and the caribou. And they take it and they go. But they took our meat all the time. You know, we just kind of had to put up with it. But we had a few, my dad wrecked a couple times over there and just about died one time. And it's a tough, real tough country over there.
Wrecked the plane?
Yeah, landed upside down one time out in the tundra. With a couple of hunters, but everybody was fine.
They walked out?
Yeah, they walked out.
From where?
It's an area called, it's the Sheriff Lake Flats. It's just in that area before you head across the Shellacock. Because you've got to hope for good weather. You leave Carlick and it takes about half an hour. But you got to be able to see the other side of the mainland to get across the Shellacock Straits. Now it doesn't matter. Everybody's got instruments. They don't matter.
Right.
But then you have to see the other side. It was a long, you know, 30, 45 minutes. It was a long one. And you never knew what the weather was going to be when you got to the other side.
So where did they hike out to?
They hiked back into our camp.
Oh, back to the camp.
Yeah.
I see. You had radios.
Yeah, we have radios and all that. And we've had some, you know, I remember one time being in the plane when we had, it was just a single engine plane, and we were coming up Carlick Flats, going to the mainland, and we ran out of gas in one tank of the plane, and again, at that time you had to switch over on the ground and on the floor. You had to switch back and forth between tanks, and stuff was wrong with the knob, and it wouldn't switch. The engine just quit, you know, and you know, it's up there, it's quiet. You know, Dad and I are looking at each other and, you know, we don't see anything. And then he just keeps messing with it and it switches over and he starts it up and it starts, you know, but
in the meantime, you start to get down around our toes.
Yeah, it's not a,
you still don't like to fly.
I hate to fly, you know, but I grew up flying around here. It's a lot safer than it used to be. You know, I can remember flying through snowstorms that we had no business being in. So everybody there was a lot, you know, it was a lot more your Kodiak or your Alaska Bliss pilot and you're flying anything. And they did. You know, they didn't care. I remember being on the floor praying, and I'm not, you know,
I'd just be
way before I kicked or anything, and Brown and I would fly back and forth, and I'd just be terrified, you know. But now I don't fly unless I feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I pick the weather I'm flying now. But anyway.
Where were you during the tidal wave?
I was in town.
And what were you doing?
My family was out. My sister and I were in town boarding out because we had started going to school half year in town. And my mom and dad would interview people and then we'd stay with whoever they picked and they were paying a certain amount of money to take care of us. And these people happened to be
have, but they also didn't believe in medicine and of any kind. And so after your choice, everybody had to be, you couldn't drink the water, you know, you had to be really careful. So we were, my one sister got really sick, but anyway, we were scared, you know, we wanted our parents to be there, but I remember we were sitting there eating spaghetti, and there was, they had about two kids, and it was me and Patty, and we were very, very close, you know. Her and I were, you know, that's all we had with each other. And they're eating spaghetti, and I remember things starting to fall off the wall, and I remember Patty and I starting to laugh, you know. But we were just, because we didn't know any better, you know. And then we realized later we were scared. We were so scared, we were laughing.
Mm-hmm.
And the people were just like, you know, they've been in the bush too long or something. They didn't know what to think of us, but, and there was a lot of, people weren't scared, you know, there was people running around everywhere and going nuts, but they weren't scared, they were just kind of frantic, you know, they didn't know what was happening. At that time, you didn't know a tidal wave was coming, you know, now they tell you, it's coming in an hour, you didn't know, but anyway, it was hard because our family was not there, and we didn't know, there was no radio communication, the rest of our family was at camp, and so, theirs was a real strange one too, because when the tidal wave hit there, it didn't hit like Kodiak, it hit in a big tide. You know, the whole bay, and there's an island that sits about, oh, I don't know, maybe, I don't know, 500 yards or so out. The wave would stop at the beginning of the bay. So instead, all the water went out of the bay. You could walk to the island. There was no water. And it was, you know,
you could walk to Amok Island.
You could walk to the island in front of you. There's a big, huge channel on Amok Island, and you couldn't have gotten to that. But the bay was basically dry. And then it came in, but not as a wave. It came in with these swirling, you know, you couldn't have stood up in it. And it just kept coming and kept coming. It came into a house, it came into the shed. You know, it just, they went. They just started heading for higher ground because they knew at that point that it was going to be trouble. But, it was very, very strange, you know, to not have it come in like it did in town. That's what they were expecting. You know, because nobody knew anything about tidal waves.
Now, where was this place you were staying at in, when the tidal wave
hit? It was in Aleutian Homes.
Oh, it was in Aleutian Homes.
And the people that we were staying with, though, owned a cannery. They ran a cannery down what's now, well, Cabrillo Road. And we went down there because he had to check out his cannery, and everything was, you know, demolished, basically. It was a mess. Yeah, but none of the boats were up, you know, because the tidal wave hadn't hit yet. People didn't know. They were wandering around, you know, and those sirens were going off, and it got dark, and I remember going up Pillar Mountain, and where low-cost housing is now, that's where we were, that's where our car was in the line. That line went all the way to the tip of Pillar Mountain, and there was cars, you could see headlights behind us, you know, for miles and miles, you know, so people were getting kind of frantic then. I think they were getting scared. You could hear people honking and all this. But I don't remember a lot afterwards. I remember just mainly at the time, you know. But it's still, you know, if we have a tremor, I just feel my body, my legs go weak, and, you know, everybody does. If you've been through it once.
Now, there was only the junior high when you were going to school. You would have only been, what, 10 years old?
13, I think.
You were born in 54.
Yeah, and that was 64. That was 10.
10.
10.
So
yeah.
You were what? You were still in elementary school.
Yeah, we were in elementary school. And Mrs. Beckford was my teacher. She's still around teaching, I think. But, I guess people whose homes were messed up went to the school. But the school was just that little, it was wooden where the state troopers is now, I guess. Where Sears used to be, where Tans and Tubbs is, where China House is.
Oh, okay.
Right up from that, up on the hill.
Well, that's not where the state troopers are.
No,
the state troopers used to be.
Well, the state troopers used to be.
Yeah.
Right.
Up in there.
Yeah.
About where the Tan apartments are?
Yeah, right in that area. And that's where a lot of the boats ended up. You know, in fact, the people, Bill and Madeline's boat, the Hecla, was right up in our, you know, in the suite, and those boats were right up in the playground, you know. And that's a long ways to go.
Yeah, that's pretty high ground up there.
And you think about it, it's outrageous. But, I don't know, people as always around here are really pulled together, you know. We saw people, Sally's is up in within about a week. We had a little frame,
Sally.
We had a little frame building with Sally's on the side. But, I don't know. It was, as usual though, we do see people really come together and help each other out. And it was a mess. You know, it was an absolute mess. I don't want to listen to another one. But, it went on from there. Everybody was, it helped a lot of businesses get started, I think. Because everybody got low disaster loans. And so a lot of businesses got started back up. It didn't take long. You know, people were back on their feet. Boats, that was a different story. But I don't think one person lost their life here. I don't think. It might have been one down in Fajillo Road. But at that time, that's where Kodiak Western and all the airplanes were, too. It was right down where the Moonies would be, I guess. Around in there. Maybe where the transient float is. Right down in there is where all the airplanes were kept. They had a little runway thing that came up, and they had to get all those guys out there really fast. They didn't lose any, I don't think.
Yeah, I heard there were people that went down on boats.
Yeah. Because some people took their boats out.
Right. Didn't make it.
Didn't make it, yeah. That's something that...
So now, did you go to high school in Kodiak?
Yep. I went to high school in Kodiak.
The present junior high now, or is it
that's
the old name?
Where the junior high is now is where I went to high school. In fact, the year I graduated is the year they opened that, the big new school. Because we never, when I was a kid, we never had swimming or anything. We didn't have a pool. But, yeah, we went to, my whole high school was in the junior high, where the junior high is now. And the old main, well, that's what, the whole time I was in elementary school was in the other building. I think I went through fifth and sixth grade there, and then moved into the junior where the junior high is now. And that was small.
So it must have been junior high school.
Yeah, it was junior high school.
Who was the principal?
Oh God, what was his name? Craig. Mr. Craig was the principal. And then Betty Springer was the principal during, not my high school years, but my elementary school. In fact, I think she was the principal at the old school, at the red school. I'm not sure.
Oh, the little red school?
It wasn't little, but it was red. It was reddish.
Reddish.
Yeah, it was right downtown. I mean, it was so little that everything was right downtown. You know, I mean, one that really sticks out of my head is Ardinger's, because they always had the neatest display, and it was right downtown. It's hard to think where it's at, that where it would be now, but it always had musical instruments in the window, and because that's what they did then. They did musical instruments. That's where I used to play the clarinet. That's where you got your clarinet. They didn't sell furniture. They just sold musical stuff. And they always, like they do now at Christmas time and any holidays, they always have the best display in their windows. I don't know, they just have always had that knack. But yeah, that's how they sold. And they were down across from where Wadlinger's, which was then Knutson's, and the drugstore was there. And it was right across the street from that. And if I thought about it long enough, I could tell you where it's at. I mean, where it would be now. But, because I think Ardinger's was down by where the Elks is. Too bad there's not an old, you know, people don't have old roads.
Oh, there's old maps of
Columbia.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. It's
true. I thought it would be easier to...
Yeah.
Can I put those little maps at the top?
That's all right. Okay, Tony. This is fun.
Okay.
Why don't you tell me some more stories that you can remember about the camp? You know, narrative stories that happened to you or your folks or things you can remember.
A lot of this one, I don't remember myself, but I do remember it happening in our family because it was a real big part. I mean, it was very important. This man, who we call Wild Bill Lucifera, who he lived at the Sheriff Lake. He felt that the land that my dad decided on was his. And every time we'd go over there to hunt.
Was he a squatter or?
He was a native man from Igigit, which is a village close to the sheriff, kind of close. And he had a home down the river, or down the lake, and it was just the most, it was a hole in the side of the hill, really. It was in a roof on it. This man lived like an animal, but he was amazing. He did everything like an animal. You could see him coming down the beach, and he would walk. He'd go on the beach, then he'd go up in the woods, and he'd come down, he'd go on the beach, and that's how a lot of animals are that. He'd go up in the woods, he'd come down on the beach, and you could tell it was Bill, for kick him out of the way if you saw him, because that's how he walked. And I remember being there, I remember his stories from a child. Everybody was afraid of him. He had killed people, and that was normal. And then so the stories got really out of hand, you know, that he took people out trapping, people never came back. One point a plane had flown over his place and seen people, skinned people, hanging in a tree. He had skinned these people, supposedly. So as a child, Wild Bill was nobody to mess with. And I was scared of it. And I remember one time, my sister and I, Jerry, were at the sheriff, and he came. And my dad wasn't there. He was out hunting. And
so you guys were alone at the camp?
Yep, with him. He had a hearing aid on. I remember him, he wanted Dad, who had a plane, to fly him to some place to get his hearing aid fixed. And we were like, oh my God, you know, this man's going to kill us. This man's going to hand us in the tree.
How old are you guys?
We weren't very old, 11, 12, two little kids. And so Dad came back when he was there. And Dad was known far more like having a temper. And he was furious with Bill for being there. And, you know, he said, Bill, I don't want you around here. I told you before, don't come here. And Bill was saying, you know, I was just introducing myself to your children. Everything's fine. It's fine. And Bill always had a look in his eye like he was really crazy. He just didn't look normal. And they went outside. My mom was also in camp. They went outside, and Bill had a rifle. And my dad was in front of him, picked up the rifle and aimed it at my dad's back. But my mother and Tom Curley, who's another guy from used to be here years ago, was there. My mother hit him with a pan, some kind of a pan that she picked up off the ground. Knocked Bill out. Us kids are just, we're not saying, we're so scared we can't move. We don't know what's going to happen. And dad and mom kept him there, called the state troopers. They flew out and took him away. But it was always, if you ever saw anybody as a kid, or even once we got home to Emma, the worst thing you could say to any of us was, I think Wild Bill's coming. Wasn't that man who called Wild Bill? We spent, you know, half our childhood in fear of this man. Now, he supposedly went down on the boat called the Cape Julia about 10 years ago. And everybody thought, great, fine, you know, he's gone. And then the guy shows up again. He had killed a minister in Igigit.
But he'd been around the world forever, his mom and dad. Well, his sister, Dora Aga, you know, which a lot of people know about today.
Okay.
Yeah. And
who's his mom and dad?
They were Finnish people. And she married Aga. Johnny Aga, you're still Marson Day, and Pakadens were the, you know, were the family, which is, I've never heard the name before or since, but they used to have a fox farm up from Amos Island, called Alps Island. They raised foxes up there, and for sale, I mean, for fur, yeah. When he was a character, he always was laughing, and they could always hear him laughing, and he'd come and pick us kids up and skip when we were little and take us to grounds with him to go fishing. And we always had a bag of candy in the side of the boat. And now something like that would probably be put away because, you know, he would come to do my boat, but he wasn't just the nicest guy. You know, he just he died about the same time that him and Mark and my dad died. And that was, there was three of them that were kind of big guys in the USA, and they've been around the longest of anybody. And Jimmy Mark, I had been at Zacher Bay for as long as I remember. As a kid, he was there. When I was a kid, he was there. And it used to be a herring plant, and he ran that. And him and Eddie were the perfect picture of two old-timers. You know, they both could tell stories forever. And Jim, who had a serious drinking problem,
one time was for a trip with two other guys who were all drinking, and ended up wrecking their stick at Carlson Point, and Jim ended up walking back, and this is like January, February, walking back to across from the cannery, which had to have been 15 miles
long way,
ended up losing most of his toes. I think he had two, just enough to balance on each foot, because he just, you know, rolled the toes off, and his fingers, I mean, he was a mess. But, and he didn't learn, he still continued to do that, but he was a great old guy. And a lot of people considered him the best mechanic there ever was. But he didn't, that was his hobby. But, you know, he would come far and wide. He never had anything wrong with that board or anything. You know, your generator. We just had a generator at camp for electricity. And he was always, you know, just calling up the question, he'd know the answer. But him and Eddie were great old guys, and they used to drive my dad nuts because my dad was not one to sit and gab or anything. He was a very quiet man, and he liked to talk politics with certain people, but that's about it. He would, with the hunters, he would never want to sit around and tell bear stories over and over again and all this stuff. And Eddie and Dad used to sit and just talk for hours. Dad was good enough. He just, you know, he said, "Don't you want to go to bed?" But they were just three totally different characters. But I think they all died within about 2 years of each other.
Mm.
And it was a real, it just never was the same out there. You know, it's changed anyway. The native line claims there's, you know, there's people putting up houses everywhere and, you know, selling it. It's a mess. But, and all three of those guys hated that. They just thought it would be the ruin of the day. And it has been, you know, to a certain extent. Or will be.
But, you know, this
can over the years.
This is sort of a stupid question, but you don't happen to remember if anything your family did anything in Alaska became a state, did you, in 59?
No, I wouldn't.
You weren't very old.
No. And if we did, and I wouldn't be surprised if my dad did, because he was very much into Alaska politics. He was always really interested in. I remember when Jay Hammond got elected the second time, I thought my dad was going to come and do it, because as much as he liked him, he was real bad for the guiding business. But I remember he would call him on the phone. And at that time, he had what was called ACS, and you had to call through a marine operator, but you could be piped right into a, there was a lady there named Marge Graham, and her and her husband, Bill Graham, who was a pilot, but they've been around forever. In fact, she was there during the earthquake, and she really kept everybody calm out there, saying, "Kodiak's still here." She kept it going the whole time.
She's in Washington.
No, she was in Kodiak, stationed up for right across from the bridge, you know, that green building up there, that flat land, the big satellite thing. That's what it used to be. And it's now no longer around, but and she just talked to people through the whole thing and said that, you know, it's okay. You know, this is happening, and, you know, so people remain cool during the whole thing. But anyway, you could call the governor's office, and my dad and Bill Pinnell calling him on a regular basis. And at that time, it was also, what's his name, Pickle and Egan and all those guys. And I know that they really heard from those guys, because they were very down to earth. They didn't care what anybody thought of what they said. You know, they just had a problem, and they didn't mind voicing it. I know that when Bill would call those girls, you know, if I die, that crazy guy in the bush. But also then I think they listened a little bit more to what people wanted, you know, out in the bush. Because a lot of Alaska was then out in the bush, you know. But anyway, I don't know. There's a lot of characters that are gone. I mean, Bill Pinnell is gone, and his partner Morris is still there, and they're in Malta Bay. And people, and also now, I noticed this summer when I went down there, the radio's quiet all the time. And when I grew up, the radio never stopped. That was your link to everything. You would hear some man, wife, call, and husband, tell us, come home for dinner. Everything was on the radio. You knew everybody's business. You know, you grew up on grew up knowing voices and not knowing faces, and I would stand in line at like the airlines to come home or whatever, and I'd hear a voice behind me and I could tell you what it was in a second. Because I'd never seen them, but I'd heard them all my whole life, you know. And that was kind of neat. Now it's not like that. You know, it used to be that everybody has phones, you know, now.
So you, let's see, you graduated from Kodiak and then...
92. And then went to Fairbanks. Or I worked here for a year, Fishing Game. I worked in Carla. We did stream surveys for Fishing Game. And I did that, and I went to Toy Bay, where I worked in a hatchery for Fishing Game. That's where my mom and dad worked together when they first came up here, when they first came from Anchorage. My dad was with something in the hatchery, I'm not really sure what. My mom cooked. And then I met Val at Carla, who was working there. And I was the only woman for about a month. And so then we went to Fairbanks and went to college. We finished up college and I just took classes. And then met Monica and then came back home and spent 2 years at camp, taking care of the camp for my dad. And just kind of roughing it and, you know, getting our lives together. And then moved into town. And now we live up in the summertime, but we don't go out there anymore, so we're not back there.
Now you were one of the first people that built a house out here in the flats after that, the second land sale, but that big one. What year was that? Remember when we bought our land?
Yeah. 80. Yeah, in fact, because we didn't build that the year we bought it. It might even have been 79. It was 80, because we built in 81.
Yeah.
I think we had it in
years. Brianna was born in 82.
Okay.
So, let's hear a little bit about the flats.
So I remember the flats way before that.
You should tell, because nobody's telling about the history of the flats.
Yeah.
Well, let's get some flat history.
I just remember, and I know I've told you this before, my mom saying, I don't care what you do, but don't go out to the flats.
And why would you come out to the flats?
Because it was fun. I mean, there was a lot of really... but fun, you know, people. And where the park is now, I remember where Cataract Creek Park was, there was a little white fountain hut. Since then, people have piled a lot of cars there, but at that time, there wasn't. And at that time, a man named Speedo Bob was there, and it was just a fountain hut. And I don't even know where the fountain hut is now, because I don't think it's one of those two. I didn't think it was back in the woods. It was more like out in the middle. Shorty Nixon?
I don't know, because they called it Shorty's Hill out here in front.
Well, I don't know. This is just, this is a long time ago.
Yeah.
And nobody lived anywhere between here and, I don't remember anything in here until you got to the end back up where Rose lives. And then there was about two or three quantum huts back in there with Tom Padalucci, and there was two or three, and it was wild times.
What about Speedo Bob? Did you have any run-ins with
him? No, in fact, all I remember about him is seeing him. And I don't think I've ever spoken to him. I remember he had a lot of dogs. You know, he had a lot of dogs, 10, 15 dogs. And I remember when he got shot, and I remember the rumors he was shot. Oh my God, you know, he shot him. And I don't know if they ever found who shot him, did they?
Not that I heard.
And I could be wrong about him being down this way. Maybe he was up farther. Because there was somebody that lived up where Bridget and Mike lived now. There was a home up there. And there was a few scattered around. And then on the other side, Nixon pretty much had that whole ranch area down in there, what is now Brookings Pit and around in there. And there's still a ranch down there.
Yeah.
I don't know if somebody lives there or not. But I was talking to somebody the other day who remembers the first people that lived out here. And Belzers, or Belzer, and I don't know who these people are, but I think it was way before what I'm talking about. But Bells, I mean, I guess used to have a farm out here. The name came from somewhere, but I'm not really sure. We'd have to find somebody a little older.
Tell us about
that. I watched it Monica?
Leave.
No. It just,
I don't know if I'm being recorded.
It was just a,
It was a wild place out here. You know,
Once you got to a certain age and you could drive, even though we were, it was kind of like going into the, a different, because we were like, white, middle-class kids. You know, we all kind of hung together. There was probably 10 or 15 of us. And for us to come out here took a lot of nerve on our part, we thought, you know. But we had about two or three friends in that group, David Williams and a few other guys. He was called Monster. I don't know if you remember him. Who had some connections out here. And so they would get us out here. It was kind of like a place you had to get into. You didn't just come out here and go to a party. You better know somebody, you know, because there was a lot of things going on out here that, you know, you didn't want the wrong people out here.
Like what?
Well, just different, you know, things. You didn't want any people from the narcotics group. You know, that's what I'm trying to say.
But you also didn't want somebody that could cause some trouble, you know. Those were liberal times, but they weren't that liberal. But yeah, they had enough people out there. Yeah, and I'm sure that there was bust out here over the years. I was lucky enough to never have been involved in one, but I don't know, as you know, this place has changed a lot. I see it, you know, in the last
10 years, you know. I mean, you've seen it. I mean, 10 years ago, we thought nothing of livestock, you know, walking through our yards, and, you know, we didn't.
Me? The livestock have given? In my yard?
Oh, God.
Okay?
Yeah.
Suck me in that one, Tony.
Yeah. What did we do to cows that walked across our lawn
when the boys were out fishing and hunting?
We should have took care of a few more. So we were smart, we would have. But probably our best cow story is, and it was winter.
Fall, I think, yeah.
It was real early in the morning because we had just gotten up, and I think we were still in our nightgowns. But we had been sick of, it was like 7:30 or 8, wasn't it, in the morning? Seemed like it was early because the kids were just getting up.
It was fairly early.
It was a Sunday because I remember we were thanking God later because there was no traffic. But we had been so sick of our lawns being destroyed by cows. This, I mean, it was getting bad to the point where when Cowboy would leave for work, he would call back and say, okay, they're coming around the bend. You know, everybody had this little network worked out. All right, here they come. Watch out for your kids or whatever, because at that time, Monica, the kids had to walk all the way down to the where the Russian River or where the Panama Creek sign is, a little boat is. They didn't have anything up here.
That's right.
So we had to worry, you know, we got 15 cows. So anyway, we look out there and there they are. And so I call you, call Pam, and say,
standing right out in the middle of your yard.
Pam, do something about this cow.
You did not say that.
Didn't
you should have said, Pam, there's a cow in my yard, shoot it.
So I look out there and I see Pam, and I think you were in the road, weren't you? You've been gun in a Pam, a very large gun. And I hear this shot, and I'm thinking that she is shot on this animal's head. And we're out on the front porch watching this cow start to go sway. It's the only word that I can think of. Sway from one side to the other. On 4 feet, but his body was swaying. Pretty soon, about the third or the fourth sway, it fell over. And we were...
That was you in Sydney.
We thought it was sick. That's how much we did not believe that Pam had actually killed the cow. We thought that it died because it was sick. It was a sick cow. And then we put two and two together and we realized that Pam, Pamela, had killed the cow. And then we spent the next couple hours going nuts. Then we got a couple of friends, men, who still to this day we were nameless, I think. And in fact, I'm starting to forget their names, but, and what was the other guy? I don't know.
Rudy.
And Pat. Okay. No, Pat. She showed up later and claimed that he had done something more than meat. But care of Pam and Sid are out there trying to cut its throat, and I'm not doing well at this at all. Yeah, the kids would run around screaming and yelling that we're going to all go to jail. But I think one of the funniest scenes is all those guys dressed in orange raincoats trying to butcher this tower. And every time a car drives by, they just start walking around and around. I mean, like, somebody's not going to notice this. But then we waited till night, and you and I got the cows in the back of that god-awful truck of yours. What was that thing?
It was an old Chevy, and it was loud,
and it barely ran.
The clutch didn't work.
And we got it into the back of the car, or truck, and we drove the truck, and we went out to the cliffside and found a spot and dumped it. And it was the middle of it. I mean, it was dark. And it was spooky. You know, here we were out there. And we got some meat off of it. We didn't probably get as much as we should have. But we were so scared that we were going to go to jail. But I still have a spot on that lawn where that cow died. It's green. You know, it's just a greener spot when it bled. But that's still. I mean, we waited years before we told anybody, didn't we?
Yeah, you told your folks about folks.
Who wrote a newspaper article.
Who wrote a newspaper article?
That's right. I kind of let it out there. But we didn't tell anybody for years because we thought that, you know, we'd be in trouble because it was a weird lab. You know, the cat had been doing some damage or
it was feral and it was doing damage.
Right. Well, it was doing damage.
It wasn't branded.
No, it was not branded. Nobody ever claimed them. And then after that, I felt like we should have shot a few more. You know, like off our front porch when they'd be back there, nobody would ever know. But, you know, we had a pick out there in the front where everybody could see it.
And then remember the croquet games?
Yeah.
With the cow divots?
Oh, yeah. Well, they ruined many a lot. You know, they're really good. And they were scary when they do so many of them. But
that was
those times were kind of fun, too. You know, they're gone. Now we can. But there's some things now that I would change. I mean, it's growing around here. It doesn't have the same. It was a real neighborhood then, too. You know, we knew we could have told anybody in this neighborhood, and probably it wouldn't have gotten past here. You know, we protected each other from stuff like that. But I don't know. People are moving, and that's what happens. I mean, things change. But, I don't know. There's still a lot of people out here that remember. I mean, I'm sure Alice up there, I mean, they've been out here a long time. Because I don't remember not having electricity or anything like that. I mean, well, you do know that I have electricity?
Oh, I lived out here before when there was electricity.
Yeah, no, I don't remember that. I mean, there were roads that weren't paved, but, you know, it has grown a lot. You know, I think it'll be nice to keep it this size. I don't think it'll bring it down to, you know, sewer water, unless we do, you know, zone it and just can't go below an acre or half an acre. Because part of what makes this place neat is that it's, people really care about their area, you know, they take good care of it. On the whole, most people do. And you start splitting it up into, you know, 4 houses on one, and I might as well be living in town.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, anything else you want to know?
Just trying to think of some more questions to ask. I'm not very good at this interview.
No, I'm
you don't want to tell stories with names. That's the problem.
No, I'm not thinking about it.
Well, can you stop being public?
No, but still. Most of the people who are in fact, I don't remember a lot of the names. I remember, you know, like some of the times that we come out, and there'd be parties out here where there'd be 50, 60 people. I mean, it would just be nuts. And I always remember my mother saying, just don't go out to those rocks. Because everybody knew, you know, that there was things to be, you know, you could buy anything you wanted out here, probably. You know, but it was not ever, and I don't ever remember anybody being hurt, or it wasn't a violent, it was not a violent time either. It was very, you know, that was in the 60s, in the late 60s, and people were, you know, pretty mellow about stuff. It was still hippies, you know. It was, everybody was happy.
Well, what about working, let's see, anything you can remember about working at Catoya Bay or the Carlock?
Well, not really Catoya Bay. Carlock, we had a lot of run-ins with bears. I grew up around bears, and my dad always saying that most people brought it on themselves, and anything would happen to you, if you just left them alone, they'd move you around. And which wasn't always the case. We had a bear. This is a cabin that sits right on the side of the river. It sits right on the river, and And the weir is right there. And the weir is a wooden structure that fish pass through when you camp, and so you get an idea of how many fish have been on this one, how many fish have gone into the lake, so that you can start a season and know that you have a good stock going in the lake. And that was our job, and to camp. And so, the rest of the work was unplugged. And anyway, we had a couple bears that we had named. They were very, very friendly. In fact, we probably weren't real smart, because a bear is not a pet. You know, under any circumstances, feeding them is not cute. And we used to give them bacon and they got a little too friendly a couple times. And they would come up and to the window and take their tongue and just wipe it all over the window. You know, and it's not a good feeling. This cabin is very small, maybe about like 16 by 20, not very big. And we'd have always, a lot of times we had 2x6 that went on a slant. There was a big 2x6 on the floor and then a slant of 2x6 going into the door. And it was a big wooden door. And that thing, as long as we were in the cabin, that was always up. Because they'd get in there and they would push and gain a lead. And we had a mother and two cubs one time get on the porch, which was about the size of my entryway, fit themselves in there, and then we're pushing. And they weren't mean, they weren't trying to eat us. They were just looking for food. Not necessarily human, I mean, they were food. They lean up against that door, you know, the door would just go like this, and go like this, and they get tired of that, and they come around, and look in the window, and they lift the window again, and you know, you spit. A lot of your time looking behind your back, you know, I just didn't know. Dan and I one time got chased, and that's about all I can tell you about it. I don't remember it. I blanked it out of my head. I just remember Dana said it was getting dark, it was kind of dusk, and Dana and I were going out in the skiff to do some surveys, and he was in front of me, and he turned around to say something to me, and a bear came from the river up over the bank onto the trail that we were on, and she was probably, at that point, you know, 100 yards away, still a long ways off, and she kept running down the trail. And Dana was going, Tony, you've got to run, she's coming. Of course, I'm not going to run, because I've been told all my life, don't run, which is pretty stupid at that point. She's coming, I should be running, but I'm not, I'm scared to death. And I turn and I look at her and I see she's coming, and I just walk like, she can't touch me. I just walk like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I've lost my mind. So I just walk like I'm pretending she's not there. And she stops. And she doesn't stop like right next to me either. She stops a ways down the trail. And she just kind of looks at us for a while. And Dana filled me on that. I do not, to this day, remember from the time he told me that I better start running to the time we got to the boat. It's just a total blankout. You know, I was scared. You know, I was scared to death. And Dana was real good about, because we did a lot of stream surveys, and the worst thing that you can do is to surprise a bear. You know, if they know you're coming, they'll usually get out of your way. You know, we never had one come after us. And we saw, you know, we'd see 10 or 15 bear a day. But we were real conscientious about making a lot of noise. Dana had a whistle, we had a harmonica, we always made noise. And that helped. But many a time we'd come around the corner and she would have just heard us before the meeting went on, and just, you know, they'd be gone. You could see them running off. But the place was infested with bears, you know, especially when I came to do fishing. You know, they were there. But it was fun too. You know, it was we had to put up a lot of tourists who would come in, usually people from other countries, and who didn't believe in treating animals with much respect, and we'd always have to stop tourists from taking long poles, which we would use on the river to get fish, you know, to move out of the way. They were real long, like we use on a seiner, and then a plunger on the end of this long pole. And it was not uncommon to have to go out there and get it away from some tourists, as they would get on the end of the weir and try to poke at a bear who's feeding at the other end of the weir. You know, and just stupid things. But the whole time I was in the weir, that hurt. But I don't see why not. I mean, they saw them ask for it. But we were probably as good as we could have been, because we were very young. And the only thing really that we did that was stupid was that we would feed them. You know, that's just not smart.
Now, how old were you?
20, 21, I was just out of high school, well, I was probably 20, at least. More like 19.
More like 19.
Yeah, more like 19. And I worked at Camp Island, which is in Clark Lake, and for what is now, it was the Fred Division. And that is, Fred Division is the company, or the part of the state that got Fred Lake back on its feet. You know, they didn't used to have a run there, and they built a ladder there. And I worked at Fred Lake for a while. And in fact, I think I was probably the first female hired by Fishing Game to work out in the near camp. So they never would hire one because they just didn't want women in there because it was all men. And they didn't want to have a problem, as they used to put it. But I always had been around. My dad flew for Fishing Game for years, and they knew my family. And so they gave me a job. And it worked out really well. I think they realized that men and women can live together in a camp without having sex. You know, it is possible. And it's the guys I worked with. But it was an experience, you know. It was fun. Now it's changed, as everything else has. Well, really, everything's been totally, you count by computer. Everything's different, you know. It's not the same as it used to be. People don't sit there with clickers and, count actual fish going through, and see, and stuff.
Anyway, I'm going to
pigeonhole. That's not me.
Okay, it's the end. We're done.